Okay.
All right. Are we ready to get started? Yeah. Let's go ahead and do that then.
It says record, so let's roll.
All right, let's go ahead and do that then. Okay, yeah. Welcome to another episode of the Pongdemic Podcast. MC Johnny D, aka you know who. None other than a great Thick Flair, and I'm joined by the hostess with the mostest, the queen of everything. Exclamation point. Amazon, how are you doing on this Mother's Day 2025?
I am alive and enjoying being a mother, but mostly just enjoying being alive. That part.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Many people may not know that Amazon is a mother. And you know what? If you look at her, you may not think like she's a grandma too, but you know, she's old.
What?
Okay. I'm just playing around.
A bad way to start today off. It is 199 in my here in the studio. And you could maybe make me use foul language today.
No, you know, we have to make sure we are compliant with the FCC. Make sure we keep the language PG-13 at the most.
I can't make any promises today. I'll do my best.
You know, and that's all that I could ask of you. If that's all you're giving me is your best, then you know, we just have to find out if that's good enough. And we will find out along the journey of our episode today. Yes. Yeah,
can't make any promises.
You know what? Just promise to try. That's all I can ask for. Yeah. So it is a toasty Mother's Day out here on this day of recording, Southern California. Temperatures are in the 90s and triple digits for a heat wave. But fear not, we will be right back down to cooler temperatures in the next couple of days as this ridge of high pressure moves over the Southland. It's going to make way for cloudier mornings and hazier sunshine. Look for highs in the mid to upper 70s over the next 5 days. And then you know what? The cooling trend may come to an end again.
Is that what it says? Like next week or what?
Quite possibly. Looking ahead at the extended forecast. For those of you guys who don't know, at one point in time, I used to want to be a meteorologist, you know, your friendly neighborhood weatherman.
I did not know that. We've been doing this. We've been in this relationship for almost 3 years. You haven't told me that. No way.
Yeah, that's how I know all the language. I took the meteorology classes and all kinds of stuff.
Look at you. You're just an educated black man. You know
what I mean? I've read a few books. I've written a few papers.
Well, listen.
That's what it is. You know, so.
Before
you listen.
Runs away because he's so busy and so dope. I'll let you do all the things you do and we'll get it going because he's hard to catch this guy.
You know what? Lately, it's been a challenge. We've talked about mental health on our show a couple times before. The anxiety has been on a million these last couple of weeks. And so, yeah, I'm not missing in action, but I am missing on some of the action. I have a whole lot going on in the real world, which unfortunately at times takes precedent over things that are happening in this virtual world of the internet where everyone feels entitled to have access to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And just doesn't always work out like that when you start to balance things out. But I'm here. We're good.
Mr. Fisher. He's hard to catch.
Oh, I thought you were talking about MC Johnny T, because I've been a little difficult to catch up to. Just a little bit, you know. Oh, I'm sorry. There I am making it all about me again. Of course. I'm making it all about me when it should really be all about punkdemic.com. Your number one destination for all attire, for all gear, for all swag, for all merchandise, Pongdemic. Hey, if we can put a label on it, we probably got it at the website. We're talking about coffee mugs, tumblers, not those cheap kind either, but the kind that keeps your fluids hot or cold for like extended hours at a time. You'll want to grab a couple of those because that season's coming up where you're going to want to keep those frosty drinks a little frostier as the weather gets a little more disrespectfully hot as we're moving into that time of year. T-shirts, you know, it's all right. Nobody really wants to buy hoodies in the summer, but it's the best time to buy them because we get the cheapest prices during that time. So go ahead and start stocking up for your fall and winter stuff as we move into the summer. Over at punkdemic.com, that's going to be punkdemic.com. That's P-U-N-K, dimmick. That's no gimmick, no limit.com. Get all of your punkdemic stuff that you need to get. All right, we got a apparently I'm not the only one that's hard to reach. As a matter of fact, probably real easy to reach relatively in comparison to our guests that we have today. So why don't you go ahead and do the honors, if you will.
I'm doing the introductions and such.
This one's all you today.
I appreciate it. Just go ahead and bring him on. He doesn't need much introduction, to be honest with you. Mr. Fisher, Mr. Norwood Fisher, the bass player extraordinaire, one of my favorite musicians. I would give you a round of applause if we had the little applause button. That's what we would do. You know what I mean? Thank you so much for being here.
I'm fortunate. I could imagine it. That's ringing in my head now. Like a 70s sitcom.
We have to get those live tracks and audience tracks. We have to just go ahead and just start figuring out a way to make it happen. No. Right now, all I've got is a... We're working on a budget, y'all. We're working on a budget. We're taking donations. Welcome to the show, Norwood. Welcome to the show.
All right. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad that we could do this today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am going to exit and just be a fanboy on the other side of this, because I just don't want to say fanboy stuff and just mess up the whole situation here. So this time you don't even have to excuse me from the room, Amazon. We usually end up this thing. I just say stuff to get myself disqualified from the show. And we're trying not to get canceled around here if we could avoid it. And I'm the one spelling out all the rules and usually the one breaking them. So this time I'm going to flex a level of maturity, and I will see my own way out without being invited. Okay?
Good day.
Oh, really? I still get the good day? Really?
Of course. It's kind of our good goodbye. All right. Hi.
Well, all right.
I'm so excited to finally get you here.
Yeah.
You've been a busy man just in the month in April and May. What you been working on the past month or so? Like, you've been all over.
You know, it's a lot more than is visible as well. Like, there's like what people see, and then there's like, okay, that's all I showed you. But really, I had an amazing April. Really, like, a few years back, I had the bright idea to take Black Sabbath's classic hits and put them through a funk filter. It started with Sweet Leaf, which I was doing with Trulio Disgracious. We started, I think it was the 35th anniversary of the band, and I was doing it at the Mint here in LA. And you know, just it was we just did black we just did Sweet Leaf straight. And we was traveling. It's a venue called the Elephant in the Room in Healdsburg, California. Huh. And we're in a sound check, and it hit me in the head. Like, I was like, how would Larry Graham approach this bass line? And I just interpreted it out immediately, and it felt good. And we did it that night. And eventually I was like, you know, looked at other songs and was like, how would Bootsy approach this?
Yes.
You know, what would a James Brown spin on this beat? Can we Sly and the Family Stone Eyes this thing right here? And just, you know, and then just kind of built out an entire show called Blackened Sabbath.
Dope. Nice.
So I was really fortunate to be able to take that show to New Orleans. Toulouse Theater. It was April 25th. But that, you know, that once that was locked down, and I had two other shows. One with Sergeant Splendor, which is Eric McFadden and Kate Vargas. I've been playing with Eric for a while. You know, there was a moment where me, Eric, and Thomas Pridgen, where Thomas. Thomas, Eric, and Norwood, 10, T-E-N. But otherwise, I would just be sitting in on the Eric McFadden, whatever Eric wanted me to do. He just called me up and we rock. And So, but I love doing Sergeant Splendor and you know, him and Kate Vargas collaboration. And so I played, I did a show with them at the Wolf's Den, Howlin' Wolf's in New Orleans.
Oh my goodness. I've always wanted to check that place out.
It's a fun space. I've had many lunatic fringe nights there. And as well, Mike Dillon. He's a vibraphonist, marimba, percussion. Nice. He plays with Primus, and he, like, I guess he started in the Flying Frog Brigade. Right. But when Primus rolls out and does, when they did the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I love Primus.
And much more. And you know, he's also Ricky Lee Jones' music director.
I didn't know that.
Amongst other things. And anyway, so he called me up and we rocked. I had one other show with him. His band is Punkadelic, which includes Nikki Glaspie on drums, Brian Holland.
Yes.
Oh my God. Well, that's, you know, I love playing with Mike. There's, you know, once you put Mike in the equation, there's nothing like it on the planet other than what he's doing and you're doing it with him, you know? So that's really like one of my favorite things. I got everything I did was amongst my favorite things to do. So you know, on the way in, I get a call from Maurice Mobetta Brown. You know, so I rocked with him. Like, we ran into each other. I was playing with a guy named Willie Waldman, who is half of Banyan with Steve Perkins. When they get together, it's Banyan. And I played with Banyan over the years. I've known Steve Perk. Me and Perk go back. He was 17 when I met him. So But the Willie Waldman project, we were playing in San Francisco, and it's all improv, at least when I play with him. and Maurice just showed up. I didn't know who he was. He popped on stage and killed it.
No way.
Yeah. This is years ago, and he took my number. We kept in touch. So I played his birthday celebration in Chicago in December.
Nice. Wait, and, Chicago, was it freezing?
Yeah, it was. Oh, it was cold. I'm lucky I've got winter coats, but you know, So I played. So Maurice called me, and I played with Mike Dillon earlier in the evening, and I did a late night with Maurice. When I got there, he'd probably been playing an hour and a half, 2 hours. And when I got up there, we just improvised all night till like for another 2 hours. And it was, the gig ended at 3:30. And Marcus Machado was on guitar. They had Dominique on keys, and it was, man. But a bunch of people came in and out. It was, you know, but I stayed. I just stood like I'm holding it down. I had a ball.
Nice. Best sets.
Yeah.
Improv, too. The improv.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. I played another time with Mike Dillon, and I forget what else. I did some stuff. I put together a thing in the I keep thinking about the, because I played a show in the Bywater at BJ's with Mike Dillon, but it's the it's an old Point Bar, and me, John Stewart, and Luis Aliart just went as a three-piece, the old Point Bar, and we are Luis Art and the Hinges as a five-piece.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And we went and did that as a three-piece. And had a ball. I just, you know, and I saw so much music. you know, you and I talked a little bit earlier. Like, I'm an early riser. I start, my day starts, no, it's normal for me to see 5 a.m.
Me too.
You know, like, that's my time, right? And so, you know, nightly, we was like coming out of event, coming out, whether I was playing, whether I was seeing music, it was like 3:30 in the morning. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm getting out of here. Laying in bed trying to wind down at 10 minutes after 4. Wait a minute, man. This, you know, I used to live like this.
It's almost time for me to get up.
Yeah. Yes. I'm still reeling from all of that. And then I record with a band called the Whitey Herzogs. I've been in Huntsville, Alabama.
What?
Right? So... Okay. So my brother Jamie came and picked me up Saturday in New Orleans. We drove to Huntsville, and I got there, and then I see like Primus is playing. So I text Les Claypool.
Nice.
And he's like, "Come on down," you know, and before, you know, long, he was like, "You want to play? You want to jam?" Fuck yeah!
Yes, I do.
So I went and I sat in with Primus, and it was just, that was, I honestly, like, it was the, you know, Maynard from Tool's 60th birthday celebration. So Pussifer and a perfect circle, and man. It was such a like a reconnection, because everybody on the damn tour, our histories go back so far.
Right.
You know, like I saw Tool as a baby band. Kimball Jones, ex-girlfriend, Anna Loins, was the A&R person that signed Tool to their first record deal.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it was really Kendall like grabbed me one, and he's like, "You gotta see this band Tool," you know. And it was on from that moment. The time I saw him, I was like, "What the hell is going on?"
Yes.
You know?
The first time I heard him, flipped my wig back, man. And Primus, you mentioned Primus. Same thing with Primus. When I first heard Primus, I was like, "What is this?" You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And again, like they were big. We were playing the Bay Area a bunch, and Primus opened for Fishbone, and it was like, what in the hell is going on? You, they're like, they done out, this is allowed,
right?
Music and Fishbone. It was like, what in the hell?
Wow. You know,
So, you know, those are long enduring friendships, and it's a lot of love. And A Perfect Circle, watch that form as well, because Billy Howard-Dale worked for Fishbone.
Right.
He was a guitar tech for Fishbone. And dude, you don't see people for a long time, and you get in a room with them, and it's like, I have always loved these human beings.
Right.
Oh, you know what I mean? Like, and you know, everybody seems to have aged well, and I know we all raised some hell, and you know, I made my mistakes, and you know, kicked my own ass across the sidewalk.
Yeah.
But you know, like it was really wait a minute, my man Brandino is calling me. I'm gonna let him know. Yeah. Kevin Brandino, like he's an incredible bassist, and he done played with so many people, but the thing, I'm like, he was an Aretha Franklin side man.
It's,
I could go on with his accolades, but I'm got to call that brother back. Anyway.
Sure do. I'll tell you what. None of those people are calling me right now.
That's name dropping. Kevin Brandino.
I'm here to say that none of the people he has mentioned are looking for my ass. I mean, did I say ass? Are looking for me.
So, and that was like, and then I went ahead and recorded with my dudes in the Whitey Herzogs and had a good time. And man, I'm recovering, you know, I'm celebrating life. That's the main thing.
I wish that's what I was recovering from. You know what I mean? That's a blessing to be, that's what you're recovering from. All that beautiful experiences with all those dope ass artists. That's amazing. That's a good thing to recover from, you know?
It is. And I just witnessing so much music, New Orleans Jazz Fest, you know, the clubs after the thing, and it's like New Orleans shouldn't be the only city on the planet that does what it does like that. Like, I wish that I could cultivate that. How about this? Fuck wishing. It's my intention to cultivate that. And
You know I'm down. I've been telling you, like, we need to get that same vibe and feel here on the West, you know, that I've been seeing in other places.
New York has the real ability to, you know, because things are so close together. It's a jam-packed city. And so it has the ability. LA is more difficult because it's so spread out and, like, you know, but if they wouldn't have killed the Central Avenue Jazz Club thing that LA had, like, that might have been a space that it could, you know, on holidays it could happen, you know. Wait, did you went frozen? I'm gonna keep talking like I'm okay.
Oh, there we go.
Okay.
Now, we had a little glitch for a second, but we could still hear you, and you were still being recorded. No, go ahead. I'm here.
No. So I was saying Central, you know, the Central Avenue jazz clubs that thrived, you know, up until I don't know the full history. They're probably into the 60s, I'd imagine. You know, brought down by police Chief Parker, you know, because he didn't like race mixing.
Yeah.
Right? He hated that everybody could show up and party.
Right.
You know, but you know, so that stifled what might be possible in this city. But man, if another city could do that thing, just have the music going like that, you know.
I mean,
in LA, you got to stop drinking at 2 a.m. So that kind of.
Because they're not stopping.
they ain't stopping. And yeah. I used to want to move there because of that. And I'm like, I'm so glad I didn't. I'd be dead or something, you know.
My buddy had a punk band there. He moved from here in SoCal to New Orleans in the French Quarter. And he was a teacher. He was a teacher, but he also had a punk band. He played bass. And I would talk to him any hour of the day, and that brother was drinking. He'd be like, I'm taking my cup, and I'm going home, and I'm over here. And everywhere he went, he had a drink in his hand. And I was like, wow. I'm so glad I can't do that here. That's just too much.
Yeah, it was attractive to me. I mean, I shifted gears and wait, somebody's yelling. Who is that? Hey, I'm doing an interview, bro. All right, I got some news for you. Please.
Welcome to LA.
There was a time when I used to, like, I live on the beach in Santa Monica.
Oh, nice.
And when I lived here a long time. And so when I was much younger, and I had no bars on my window.
Oh no!
You know, it was just the way it was, and I used to exit and enter through my window.
Oh my gosh!
And so anybody that come to my window and yelling has known me for a long time.
Oh, was that your window?
He
was
That
was a homie from back in the day.
Yeah, and he's I'd imagine he's coming to pass on some news, because I had a homie, a musical collaborator named Hawaiian Lion just passed away.
I think I heard about it.
Yeah. So, you know, the people who knew him are making sure everybody know. And I think we're going to do a memorial, or, you know, along with, it would be, I just got a call today about a memorial possible in Orange County.
Okay.
The venue that we do, like, you can't broadcast it on social media.
Oh, I get it. No, but keep me in the loop. I would love to attend.
I don't know why it's like that.
Well, you know what? Everybody's not into that. Like, if it's to pay your respects, everything doesn't need to be recorded and posted. You know what I mean? That's just something this generation does.
Well, no. It's not because of the memorial. It's because that's just how the venue operates.
Yeah,
that's why. Like, yeah, in a memorial, yeah, it can make sense to do it like that. But, you know, yeah. So Hawaiian Lion passed away. I had another brother pass away, Vlad the Mad Ukrainian, and he's a St. Louis. He's St. Louis based, and yeah. So that had a little double whammy, you know, through the whole Jazz Fest thing hey, you know what, we all gonna pass that threshold at some point. That's just a part of, like, you're born to do that, if nothing else.
Way too soon,
and those are some too soon brothers. So
I didn't get to go to Afro Bowie. So I wanted to ask you about Afro Bowie. I ended up having to work. My regular job is not a job where I can just not go. I don't feel like it. So I had to work, but everybody was there from what I understand. I left out. Tell me about Afro Bowie here in LA.
You missed a good one, honey. That was like, yeah. You know, there's some video footage that'll be edited properly, I'm sure, and begin to be put in the social medias. But, man, okay, so, like, you know, this is the third time we've done Afro Bowie. Me, my production partner, Kentia Frazier, we started doing events at Wisdom LA. A dome park. It's gone now. It was like a baby sphere.
Okay.
And you know, there's a band that I play with on a regular basis called Think X, and Think X was the first band there. It's basically our own interpretations of the Pink Floyd material, and it's Scott Page, who in 85 became a member of Pink Floyd, began to tour with him. It was after Roger Waters left, right? And Roberta Freeman, who spent some time in the band Pink Floyd as well. And she also was the first woman who sang with Guns N' Roses.
Nice.
But it's an all-star band and you know, Steve Perkins on drums, Kenny Olsen from Kid Rock and Brown, original Brown Trucker Band, and Derek Day and Will Champlin, and am I forgetting somebody? But I think I got everybody. But anyway, we were the first band there, and then I walked in and I'm like, I want to do psychedelic funk, and I want to do all improvised dub in this spot.
Nice.
So, Ed Kentia was a part of the infrastructure of it. He's the one who came to me to say, like, you should do this. and I turned it over to Scott. And so I just kept saying, I want to do, this is what I want to do. And then one day Kentia was like, I'll help you.
Nice.
And so the first thing that we did was called Dubbing the Dome.
Huh.
And it was, and I yanked Shinehead's chain, put together an all-star band, had Subatomic. Subatomic was, he, at the time, he was doing the live dub for Lee Scratch Perry.
Dude.
It's the Subatomic sound system. So they ride with, they all quite, like, I, more than not, it just seemed like Michael Rose.
I remember.
Rolling with it, with so, but Subatomic was on the dub. I got guys from the Agrolites. My dude, Dale Williams from the Sun Ra Orchestra. He's passed away now, but he was Sun Ra Orchestra from 1973 to 1993.
I was following them. I still follow them.
Oh, as you can't, yeah, that's a legacy there. Woo! I did not grow up knowing the fullness of that. I hear the next, see the albums, knew the name, but I wasn't buying them. I was older,
right,
and adult when I dug in.
Amazing.
And yeah, it's like, you know, the more I began to know about Sun Ra, the more incredible his story is, any way you slice it.
Yes. You know?
And, you know, like he was at the forefront of so much thought. One, you know, where would Afrofuturism be without a Sun Ra?
For sure. No way. Right? Yeah.
And the conversations that he was having about outer space and as it related to Black people, you know?
Yeah.
And dealing with Egypt and all of these relationships, you know, so that would eventually be like Earth, Wind & Fire and Parliament Funkadelic.
That's right.
You know? I don't forgot where I was going, because I guess it don't matter when you stumble into Sun Ra.
Ricky, I know. I can't help it either. Yeah, we got a little deterred. It's okay. So we're back on Afro Bowie. I saw Vernon was there. Corey was there. I was sad. You know, I was crying in my soup that day. I was, Corey, oh, see you Monday. And I was like, no, you won't.
And you know what? That was a fundraiser, right? But it started off, you know, with just, and, you know, Justin Warfield is such an amazing brother, you know what I mean? Like, and everybody involved, Kitten, and oh my God, like, yeah, playing with Cat Dyson, you know, that's my sister is, it, so everybody involved, I could keep going, but wait, I got to play with Omar Hakim, like that one, you know?
I missed it.
Yeah, and
out and everything that day.
Yeah, and as well, Daru Jones, right? Like I'm the bass player, like that. I got to play with them two in one show. Like that's, you know, anyway, I could go on. I could name everybody that was there, and it's just mind blowing. So the Dub in the Dome, and then we branded some Interplanetary Funksmanship.
Nice.
First thing, and that was at the end December 2019. We brought in Fred Wesley. I wanted to give it, to basically honor Fred, because what, like his journey, him and Maceo, but really like Fred, I love them both, and I met them both at the same time when they was playing with the Red Hot Chili Peppers. But bring in Fred and just throw down with some Horny Horns, you know, a little James Brown, You know, it was incredible just to lift him up. Because what a legacy. You know, you at the foundational invention of funk with James Brown.
Yes.
You know, and then you move into the funk. With the whole Parliament funkadelic macrocosm with Bootsy, you know, like, and spread all over that thing, and you know, it's with his own solo albums and everything. It's like, yeah. So we had that was how Kentia and I began to work together, and then it was Kentia's actual idea for Afro Bowie. And we just, he said it, and I'm like, let's go. And we started, you know, if this was the 80s, we'd be pulling out a Rolodex. But, so we reached out to see who wanted to be involved. The first one we did at Wisdom, and Seal called and was like, I got to be a part of this.
No way.
Yeah.
Hey.
It's a YouTube video with Seal. He called 2 days before the show. And then he was like, I want to do this and that.
You said, okay.
Fishbone got a long history with Seal too. Like before his first music came out, we were introduced to him in London. And, he came and he threw down. And that motherfucker went George Clinton James Brown on us. It was amazing. He commanded the audience in a way through a party. And honestly, really, in that George Clinton, you can't keep me off the stage. Dang, like he did his two songs. And then, you know, at the end of Let's Dance, he was like, I gotta get some, and he rocked a party.
What?
Yeah. So anyway, you know, we had one more in between, and it would have David Bowie's birthday, January 9th. And so that was thwarted by the fires.
Right. So I remember that, I just keep saying they, Vernon and Courtney were just flying in while LA was on fire.
Well,
I sent a text. I go, hey, are you guys good? Like, whoa. Like, they were here for the nitty and the gritty, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And Omar Hakim was staying in the Palisades.
No, see, yeah. Everybody was staying, so I was just sending little messages like, you guys good? Like, I don't know where everybody is, but we're on fire, so we burn it.
Yeah, well, they got here, and we had to have a conversation about, like, is it safe? Because, you know, they had loved ones, like, bring your ass home, LA is on fire.
We burn it.
It wasn't even full apocalypse yet.
Right. Yeah. That was wild. Yeah.
So yeah, it was like, you know, and for us it's like, yeah, LA burns sometimes. Like, but they don't ever get that bad. It got that bad.
That was scary.
So, you know, I'm trying to be a calming agent because LA burns sometimes. Malibu burn, the city don't stop.
Right.
You know, city ain't never stopped for Malibu. But you know what? And it was Justin Warfield that was like, you know, we in rehearsal, like we about to have a show. LA's burning. Justin is laughing like we doing this. We right. Going forward like we gonna do a show. This show ain't happening. And I'm like, I hear you, but like, I'm programmed with the show must go on. Like it's just in my DNA. Like. You know, I had one of my great aunt's, I mean, yeah, my grandmother's sister. When I was like, I was 12 and I was 11 and bass kicked in that summer. I was in Coffeyville, Kansas. And my aunt saw the fire in me, and one day she sat me down. She was like, she gave me some pointers. And the one was, it don't matter what happened, make sure the party keep cracking. She didn't use those terms, but she don't matter what happened, make sure the party keep cracking.
Show must go on.
She was like, if the power go out in the building, keep the party cracking. And you know, if anybody ever seen especially them Fishbone shows, sometimes we was on fire and out went the power. Yeah. And I'd be like, y'all keep your hands clapping. You know, yelling into the audience, yo, party over here. You know, yeah. And that's my Aunt Martha.
Yeah, a little pearl.
Yeah, yeah. But so anyway, but Justin was brought to, like, he was like, look, y'all, we got to talk. And we all sat down and, you know, and really reasoned towards postponing it, because it didn't look like the fires was going nowhere.
Right. You know?
So, and so that's why it was March 31st, and you know, and you know what, I'm in the spirit of giving as much as possible. Like that's just, people have given to me, people have supported me.
That's right.
In my time of need, love and support has flowed my way. And I'm like, every opportunity I get, I'm a be on the side of, like, I can use my talents.
That's right.
But to benefit others, I'm doing it.
Yeah, because I know when it was happening, we didn't think it was going to get as bad as it did. It just kept going.
Yeah.
And then it got to a point where, yeah, people need some things. Like it's getting really bad. So I'm really glad you were together and did that a fundraiser.
So there's more coming. We got some concepts. We're working on future interplanetary functionships, taking Afro Boy to New York and San Francisco at the very least.
Yay.
I don't know if I should go into these other things exactly. You know, because it ain't real till it's real, right? Like, you gotta, you know, I got to, like, I'm about to do something, and then I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I understand. But also at the same time, it doesn't happen until you speak it into existence. So it's a catch 22.
They say, know what?
It's real, but you don't make
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's some things on the horizon. And if, you know, I think I should wait a little bit.
All right, well,
but you'll be the first to know.
Okay, listen, I just thought of something. This is way, way out of left field. A little silly. Do you do a Bootsy impression? Because I don't know a bass player that doesn't do a Bootsy impression, whether they do it in their closet and don't show nobody.
How about this?
Bootsy impression. I want to know. I want to see it. I want to see it. I know you got one.
How about this?
Uh-oh.
My whole get down is a Bootsy impression on some level. Every bass line you ever heard me play, it's a Bootsy impression somewhere up in that motherfucker. Yeah. I'm like,
no, but
no, absolutely. I just ain't did it in decades.
Come on, I want to hear it. Listen, what he plays is the shit he says before and after his song. Do you remember, wasn't it Infectious Grooves? And they were like doing their imitations, and it was like, because the love you find is a love you may never find, because you may never find it. Just some outrageous shit.
Oh, yeah, baby, Baba. You, yes. How else am I supposed to capture a booty? Except attacking from the back, Baba.
Oh my. What was it? I was listening to, I think it was the beginning or the end of Rather Be With You.
Yeah.
What did you say? I'm going to spread my love. Well, like, wait a minute, that don't even sound right. Like, is that appropriate? Johnny Taylor. Bootsy, you've been dying to do a Bootsy.
You know, I was just talking to somebody about, you know, like my whole musical thing, like, you know, like my first favorite record was Hey Jude, right? I loved it so much. I do not remember. I was maybe like 3 or something, and my parents got me the single.
Okay.
And so I don't remember it coming home. I just remember staring at the record going around the turntable, you know, forever. And then my next favorite things I really can recall was like the Ohio Players, because Funky Worm, right?
Ooh,
and and I had a dance called The Screw. I think I was like 5 or 6 years old when that came out, probably 6. And Sly and the Family Stone was high on my, you know, thing. And I had a cousin, Marva Jo Swinton, rest in peace, who is her record collection actually very, very foundational to my formation. But Marva Jo, we was headed to a family reunion in Sacramento. And like way too many people in the car, but I'm sitting up, Sly and the Family Stone came on. I was like, oh, turn that up. And Marva was like, no, don't turn that down. That music is meant for white people. I'm like, Sly is black as me and you. I was 6, you know. I wasn't having no, you cannot tell me Sly is not, but that give you like that's a foundational moment for me too. But then I got a guitar at age 6. I asked for that for Christmas. And my mom's obliged. And then at age 8, I asked for a weight set. I was about to get diesel.
What were you going to do?
At 8 years old, I was ready to get my He-Man on.
Oh, Lord.
You know? My cousin Bud came over Christmas Day, and he traded me that weight set. I never lifted them weights. I was like, when I first got them, lifted a little bit that morning, but that afternoon, didn't make it to the evening. Bud came over and was like, I trade you my bass for the weights. I throw in an amp and a speaker, and you can have my rock record collection. I'm not listening to rock anymore. I'm listening to jazz.
Nice.
So I got the first Funkadelic album and America Eats Its Young in that collection. I could go through what was in there. It was incredible. But I was 8, so it had to be earlier that year. My cousin Bud came over. I could have been 7 at the time. And his mother would not allow him to play Funkadelic in her house. He asked my mother, and my mother allowed it. So, if you will suck my soul, I will lick your funky emotions is the first line on the first Funkadelic album. I was like, what the hell? Me and my brother was like, oh shit. And then America Eats Its Young had a song on it called Pussy. And, you know. We were like, yeah, something's wrong, but it feels good. And so, and there's a Bootsy song on America Eats Its Young Bootsy, a song called Fillmore. So a few years later, there is the first Bootsy album comes out, Stretching Out. And my friends on the block was like, I didn't hear it. My friends on the block was like, you're going to love this. It's, you hear Bootsy, you're going to love it. It's meant for you.
And it was.
And it absolutely was. That's, you know, like,
yeah. Yeah, I think that's going to be my thing. I'm going to ask all every bass player to do their Bootsy impression because I know they all have one. Now, Johnny, you don't play the bass, but he's been dying to do Bootsy. I ain't going to lie. He's dying to have a rhythm to do his Bootsy. So, JT, come on.
I don't know that I have like the best Bootsy, baby. I don't really know. But I remember he was on KD's album, Ass, Gas, or Cash. No one rocks for free, baby.
And oh, wait. So, look, I was talking about the Fred Wesley show, right?
Yes.
So, very shortly after that, I got a call from Kentia, and he's like, you want to do a Bootsy show? I got scared.
Huh.
I was like, well, like, you know, this is January 2020, early January 2020. And I'm like, can we do it in September? Because I was about to reach out to Howard Scott from War, the original War. Now, at the time, it was the Lowrider Band, and because they couldn't use the name War. And I was about to reach out to Howard Scott to be the next show after Fred Wesley, and Kentia was like, "Nah, Bootsy wants to do it now."
Oh,
and we had 2 weeks to put it together, and we did. And it was Bootsy Collins, Fred Wesley. We brought him back a second time, and Bernard Purdy. We had James Gatson on it, but he fell ill, and so Bootsy came out of the NAMM show. And he got sick, and the likelihood, I never asked him if he thought it was COVID or not, but he likelihood it was COVID.
Probably.
And just, it wasn't called COVID yet. It was, he was just sick. And he must have been sick as hell. Cause there's this event called Music Messe in Germany, Frankfurt. Germany, and it's like the NAMM show on steroids. Like,
wow.
It's three times larger than NAMM, or five times, I don't know. It's massive. We're there with Warwick, my bassist, and Bootsy was they were making Bootsy a star bass, and so we did this jam. Me, Blackbird McKnight, Tim Stevens, and Bootsy. And afterwards, Bootsy is like, Norwood, come help me sign autographs.
Okay.
And I'm like, it sounded weird to me. Like, how am I going to help Bootsy sign an autograph? Tim Stevens ran. Me and Blackbird sat down and signed autographs with Bootsy.
Oh, that's cool.
And I got to see Bootsy. The line was so long, it was ridiculous. And Bootsy's commitment to the rubber fans is like, he's going to sign every autograph.
Yes.
He don't want to say no to nobody in that capacity.
He's personable. He's very personable.
It was, and you know, Peppermint Patty had to drag him away because it was just going on way too long. You know, so yeah, he's a beautiful brother with that kind of thing. Him and George are like really like, you know, they got, I'm, you know, I know them because they give love like that, you know.
Yeah, I think it was a NAMM. God, I don't even remember what NAMM was. It was in Long Beach. I don't know, 2007, 8. I can't remember. It was a while ago. But he was there, and he was just the most coolest cat ever. Like, he was just chilling like he wasn't Bootsy fucking Collins. I'm like, but you're Bootsy, right? So he just left a lasting impression, and he's on social media, and every blue moon, I'll get a quick little interaction with him. I told him, I said, I'm gonna wear you down, Mr. Collins. You're gonna come talk to me sooner and later. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And,
I,
because he's just such an interesting character, man. Like I said, the stuff he says is way more mind-boggling than the music itself. I'm like, what did you just say?
He's you know what? Because he is freedom of expression embodied.
Very much so.
You know what I mean? Like on bass and songwriting wise and all everything, it's like there's nothing that said that came before him that says you should be able to do all that.
Right.
Except for Funkadelic and Larry Graham straddled, you know, with some of his bass work, of course. But really, Bootsy was on another thing. And, you know, it took George's support and them together, like, you know, like, actually, yeah, they were, you know, created a freedom. And really, like, hey, whatever that Afrofuturism conversation is, again, from Sun Ra to that camp, you know, and then on into the Fishbone Living Color, like, you know, and, you know, Tory Ruffin, Morris Day and the Time guitarist, right? He used to say Fishbone is the sound of runaway slaves.
Dang. Wow. I'd never heard that one.
Yeah. Wow. It's, you know, it's like, motherfucker, I'm free, bitch. You know, that was, you know, and I do what I want, when I want, how I want, you know? So yeah, you know, it's so, you know, yeah, like I'm just, I grew up and was, you know, could be a part of that lineage, you know? But look, I want to contemplate Little Richard right now.
Well, let's do it.
Because he is the first punk rocker.
Little Richard is the original.
He is the first punk. He didn't give a fuck.
Richard didn't give a damn. Not one damn. Like, none.
He was like gay, bisexual, loud as hell, banging the shit out of the piano, yelling at the top of his lungs. You know.
Outlandish.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's his and everything that came after him, like, you know, when it came down to like doing Afro Bowie, like what Bowie owes to Little Richard, right? You got the Little Richard Bowie Prince,
yeah,
right? That thing, like, good God, you know.
Well, we're creeping up on our hour. I'm not gonna cut you off, but let me know, fill me in on some stuff you're working on in the future, like what you got going down the line here. Like, summer is just getting warmed up. What else are you working on?
Well, I'm building more Black and Sabbath. You know, I got several personal projects. Trulio Disgracia is my main thing right now. But I emerge as Woody Woodstraw, the Devil's Son-in-Law. Which is something I'll just run around, do like mostly doing acoustic, playing a little guitar, a little bass, and I got some crazy ass songs that go with it. I began to do the Family Hood and Experience as I coined the term the Family Hood basically because in Fishbone, I've looked at our fans like I understood that's our support system and the love that they was giving us, it was like, it's more like family than fandom. And mm-hmm. So I came up with the term familyhood. And then we began to do, I wanted to do all improvised dub reggae. And so as the members of Fishbone, that's how it started. I put one release out, called To the Hilt.
Okay.
Under the name The Family Hood and Experience. And I got another one in the can. And I just got like my record label, I got a distribution deal, In a Nutshell Recordings.
Okay.
The logo on that surfboard back there is a unicorn seahorse skeleton.
Okay.
That's my logo. Anyway, I got a whole lot more in the bag. In the bag, I'll be clicking up with hopefully Marcus Machado and laying some shit down. And we had good talks in New Orleans. So, and going around and spreading myself, my bass, and vocals wherever I can.
Well, I'm just so excited you're finally here. There would be no Punkdemic without you and Fishbone. I always say this because you guys were one of the first Black records I saw when I was when I was young, and I'm older than I look. I celebrate my 29th birthday every year. I'm my 29th birthday. And I had to be I had to be no more than like 12, 13 years old. And to see somebody that looked like me doing what you guys were doing was fucking life-changing for me. You know, besides, you know, backyard shows and things like that. There wouldn't be an Amazon if I hadn't seen you. I mentioned you because you've always been to me one of the more friendly, personable members of said group.
That's all. Yeah.
You've always been just very loving and friendly, like approachable. And I remember seeing you, and you were just really nice. You and also HR. HR was hella cool in person and friendly. And I saw him. Remember I was telling you I saw him play. He had that blue wig on some time back. And
yeah.
He kissed me on the cheek and said something like "Ruga duga, fruga duga." I didn't give a damn. I'm never gonna wash my face again.
You know what? My big brothers in from Bad Brains—they are so insanely dynamic as musicians and found. Like honestly, when I contemplate Bad Brains, I'm like I never asked the guys in Metallica, but I swear to God, their sound is always been like, take a little bit of Bad Brains, take a little bit of Iron Maiden, put some Motorhead in it and shake it up and Metallica.
Isn't that something? I thought about that. That's a trick.
You know, but you had to have Bad Brains. You know what? Because look, this is something that like, I did not grow up knowing, and I didn't know till Jimmy Gestapo from Murphy's Law and Jack Flanagan, who was their tour manager and eventually managed Clutch and has passed away, rest in peace, Jack Flanagan. But one day they explained to me how all of New York hardcore lies on the shoulder of Bad Brains. Because the first time Bad Brains came to New York, they blew the walls down, of course, and Jack Flanagan turned around the very next day and started a band called The Mob. It was the first New York hardcore band.
I know that.
And everything comes after that.
Yeah, well, a lot came after you too, Norwood. So I'm trying not to fangirl up, but you've been part of my whole musical history. Like, you can't get to where I'm at now and not meet you somewhere to some capacity doing something. Like, it's ridiculous. So thank you again so much. Like, it just made my whole, you know, it took us a second to get it together.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad you're here. And I mean literally, and I mean that figuratively.
I'm happy you had me. And, you know, like, hopefully there's a lot more people versions of what you're doing out there, because that is what it's going to take to raise Atlantis to the top.
That part,
you know,
100%.
It's like, so I appreciate what you do. Because you know, these are there's a moment where we uplift each other. And that's what it's about.
Thank you. Hi, Taylor, get your butt in here. Hi.
MC Johnny T.
I behaved myself today. I behaved myself. Only one Bootsy impersonation. I did well. I did good. I earned my cookie today. Let's do that. Norwood, thanks for making time to be part of our episode today. We appreciate the energy, and we appreciate the stories that you brought. And I mean, what a legendary career, right?
Man, exactly. I feel fortunate, like, that the door is open, because a lot of people work really hard and the doors don't open. And so I'm just one, you know? And again, man, I'm here to support the next generation and the generation that comes after them. And just because, you know, that's what the Neville brothers did for Fishbone. That's what George Clinton did. You know, yeah. And many, many others.
For sure.
Well, the hardest part of the party is when it's time to leave. Yeah. This has been a great party today. It really has been. Yeah. But unfortunately, the cops are coming in. The DJ has unplugged from the wall. And
hey, happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
And I'm going to go click up with my mother and do some dinner.
Aww. That's right. That's what's up. All right. Well, you know, we don't have a closing, but that feels like a great way to sign off for today. This was all for right. The moms out there. Thanks for all that you do. I mean, without you guys, actually, in this most literal sense, none of us would be here. And that is scientifically speaking. So until next time, be kind to your mind and one another. And we are signing off from the Punkdemic Podcast.
All right.
Later.